I've chosen today the 21st Psalm. We've already done the 20th, but we didn't pay attention at that time to the fact that there are a series of at least 11 Mizmorei Tehillim that are called Shirei HaMelech. You will recall, perhaps, that when the people first came to ask for a king so that we could be like all other nations, Shmuel HaNavi, who was both a Navi and a Shofet, his number one issue was that he saw this as an attempt to get away from the kingdom of Hashem and have instead a human flesh and blood king. Yet at the same time, there is a whole chapter in the Torah speaking that when we would come to Eretz Yisrael and we would conquer the land, we would ask for a king, and it then indicates what the limitations of the king are. It is not clear, and there's an issue of great controversy about whether this is a case of reshut, in other words, if you must, then here's the conditions for having a king, or if it is actually an imperative to have a king. From the latter prophets, you would presume that ultimately there should be a king. And we know that the promise was made to David that his reign would last forever. David, Melech Yisrael, Chai V'Kayam. Not because he's walking amongst us, but because his children would be the direct link to Melech HaMoshiach. We also know that there's supposed to be a Moshiach ben Yosef. Namely, there isn't a tribe called Yosef. There are instead the children of Yosef. And you will remember that Shaul, our first king, came from the children of Rachel. David comes from the part of Yehuda. Had the marriage between Michal and David worked out, we would have had a union of the house of the children of Rachel and the house of the children of Leah, and there would have been Yachad Shiftei Yisrael. It would have been both a marriage of passion as well as a marriage of political convenience, had that been successful. What occurs in our mizmo, as we're looking at it, is that we need to understand that after the series of battles that occurred from the days of Yehoshua, all throughout the period of the Shoftim, were entailed in conquering the land, and battles that were entailed in other peoples besides the seven nations that had been living there, there were other conquerors that wanted to take over, namely the Plishtim, let's say the Philistines. The Philistines are actually people that had come from the Greek Isles. They, being seafarers, looked for other places to settle. And they settled along the coastline of the Mediterranean, all the way up in the area that we would think of as today as Lebanon. So Tyre, Sidon were actually Philistine cities, you see. And then they settled down along the coastline, and they were not, by their craft, farmers. What they tended to do was they tended to colonize certain areas, and the indigenous population would become their serfs. And they would till the soil, they would take a large portion of it for themselves and leave them enough on a subsistence level. So now that Israel has conquered the land, there are now people from the outside trying to take over. The Plishtim, who have been on the coastline, are now trying to move in, and they make periodic raids, and sometimes very successful ones, which, you know, leads to that famous battle of Goliath that you're all familiar with. There are also raids going on from the east. The Ammonites, the Moabim, try to come across over to the Jordan River and take over. So those are the battles that we are dealing with on the borders where we had expanded. Now, we already discussed in the past that David in his lifetime succeeded in actually getting sovereignty over Eretz Israel from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean coast all the way up to what we would think of as the Golan Heights today in Syria, all the way down to the Negev, even reaching an opening to the Red Sea. Given the fact that these battles were now over, everyone's mind turned to two major issues. And those issues are discussed in the Book of Devarim. Namely, once you had conquered the land, a king and Beit HaMikdash. David has managed not only these marvelous military successes, but he has raised the stature of the monarchy from the days of Shaul, because they've only had experience with one who was marginally successful, and now this guy has now become the national hero. And the national hero made him suddenly into a model of the kind of king that we should have. There were times when he actually succeeded in meeting those ideals, those standards. Sadly, there were times in which he faltered. Had he not publicized it, had he not come out in public and said, "Chatati, I sinned," we would probably have lost respect for him. The fact that he was willing to admit publicly the mistakes that he had made and assumed instead the original personality that we knew made him a model for the kind of king that we hopefully will have in what we would see as the Moshiach that would ultimately come. And that's why there are so many Mizmorei Tehillim that speak about the king. Now, in our particular Mizmor, from Pasuk Bet through Pasuk Zayin, if you look carefully, you will see that we speak about the king in third person, while addressing God in second person. So it seems that we are actually praying to Hashem about the king, without mentioning him, of course, by name. Because this is not supposed to be about one king. This is supposed to be about what the monarch should be, and what our prayer for the monarch is. In between, there is a one line, verse 8, in which we speak both about the king and about God in third person. In the second half, from verse 9 through 13, we switch things around and we speak to the king first. And I'm speaking about God in third person. So clearly we are addressing the king in this case. The final verse, if you look carefully, you will see that it is speaking again to God, and it is a return to a prayer. And it is talking directly to Hashem. We will try to make sense of what's actually happening here. In the seventh chapter of Shmuel Bet, we hear as follows. This is the message of the prophet Nathan to David. Ve'ata kotomar le'avdi le'David. Ko'amar Hashem tzvakot. This is what Hashem said. Quote. Because David was a reluctant king. He really didn't think he was worthy. He had come to be a musician for Shaul. He found himself going to battle, but not because he was a swordsman or because he was a trained soldier against Goliath. He became the reluctant hero. He was really sort of like the runt of the litter. We talked about that. And didn't see himself in this position. And the irony is that the more he didn't want it, the more the people loved him. And that, of course, aroused Shaul's jealousy to see him becoming increasingly popular amongst the people. Now he was anointed. And in his mind, probably, he expected that if he would take the throne, it would be upon Shaul's natural death. He would continue to be his son-in-law and his servant. And maybe it would then, the throne would come to him. But he did not seek it. And now Natan is coming to him and says, I need you to understand, I took you from there, from being a shepherd boy, to become a Nagid. They translate this as prince. But Nagid really comes from the word Lahagid. It means a spokesman. The one that speaks for his people. Ve'yemcha, I will be with you. Bechol asher alachta. Now, I was with you in all that you went. I will be with you. I was with you wherever it is that you go. Cut off all your enemies in front of you. You'll see it happen in your lifetime. I will create for you a great name. You'll have great renown. Like the names of the great ones, meaning the heroes of the world. But the purpose of it all is not for your personal aggrandizement. Santi makom le'ami le'Yisrael untativ. My purpose is to make a place for my nation, for Israel, so that they can be well planted there. In other words, not just a wanderer going from place to place, but like a tree with deep roots in it. Vishachan tachtav ve'lo yirgazot, so that they can dwell in their own place, the place where they're, you know, they finally found roots in, and no longer be shaken up, constantly at war. I won't let evil people constantly torture them, oppress them. Kasher barishona, as it was in the beginning, meaning in the beginning of the first commonwealth upon settling Eretz Yisrael, where supposedly we were coming as a free people, next thing you know, certain sections of us, we had become serfs. Serfs to the Kanaanim, serfs to the Plishtim, you understand? And not free people. That is my purpose. That's your job. And you will see that, in fact, David saw his role as pursuer of justice. Justice for the people. Justice outside of the legal system. Because not everything can be adjudicated in a court. Remember this shoftim? Sometimes you need justice outside of that. And what was his job? It tells us as follows, Vayimloch David, as he was commanded to do this. This is now the 8th chapter after he was commanded. Al Kor Yisrael, he reigned over all of Israel. And when we're saying that, we mean both the tribes of Rachel and the tribes of Yehuda, all 12 tribes. Vayhi David osem mishpat utzdakal lecholamo. And there wasn't an issue of favoritism for some people as opposed to other. Sometimes people got into financial troubles. You'll remember that David, when he was a fugitive, was running with 400 men who had been outlaws. What made them outlaws is that if you were a farmer and you had a couple of bad years, you might fall into debt and you might not have any way of paying back those debts. So you end up giving up your land, you gave up your home, you found yourself homeless. Now, granted that in the Yovel, they're supposed to give you back that land, but until then, by God, you'll be dead. So you find yourself as a wanderer, maybe hiring yourself out for some labor, or maybe hiring yourself out as a mercenary. There were people who found themselves in a position of losing their homes and were now without a means of earning a living. So remember, this is still an agrarian society. We don't have yet big cities where people come to work in factories or in services. And so he's trying to set things right again. More importantly, he proves himself as a man of the people. And how did that come across? It came across, actually, even before Hashem chose him, even while Shaul is still alive. You will recall that after the great battles, the Philistines had managed to take the Ark of the Covenant away. They saw it as having some kind of, if you like, magical powers in protecting the people. Well, now that has been restored, and it was kept for a while in Beit Shemesh, and now it is being brought up to Yerushalayim in great celebration. That was the ultimate victory. And this precedes our building the Beit HaMikdash. So the ark was brought there. V'David mechalkel gachol oz lifnei Hashem. V'David chagur efot bad. And David, along with the people, is out in the streets dancing, simply with a linen tunic, like a common man. You remember that only royalty wore colored garments. Common people wore homespun that was essentially just plain raw linen or wool. And he's dressed like a commoner, and he's dancing and leaping like all the rest of the people. When Michal observes him that way, she gets this contemptuous look on him and says to him, "Oh my God, you were out there dancing like one of the lowest of the low." And he responds to her, "V'nakolti od mizot, I'd rather be even lower than that. V'ayiti shafel beinai, I want to continue to be low in my own eyes. V'imamaot asher amart, with the maids, with the servants that you hold in such contempt, I'd rather be just with them." Because she, being the second generation to the throne, had already gotten a little bit uppity. Imam Echabeda, I don't seek the honors of the upper classes, I seek to be honored by the common people. And that is really, it was actually spoken from the heart. That's the way he saw himself. When finally he does become king and Shaul is dead, he comes back and he says to Natan, "Re'ena anochi yoshev bebeit arazim." Here I am, living in a cedar house, in a palace. "Ve'aron ha'elokim yoshev betoch ha'iriya." And the ark is merely inside this tent of cloth. Pastished. Now, I do want to point out to you that that same humility was apparent in the end of his life. You will recall that when Avshalom foments a rebellion against his father towards the end of his life, David does what? He leaves Yerushalayim, fearful that the war and the battle will affect both his household as well as the populace in the city, goes out and hides in the same places that he, when he was fleeing from Shaul, to take the battle away from the people. He would rather be killed than have others killed protecting him. So this notion about, you know, I'm here at the will of God and not in any other way, was there both in the beginning and at the end, with a slip in the middle. You understand? It was only that one faltering, because unfortunately, as you know, power corrupts. Furthermore, he feels a great responsibility for the people, and he would rather God punish him than them. David made a mistake when he went and counted and created a census against God's will. There was a certain measure of ego. How many soldiers do I have? How many people do I have? How big is my kingdom? And what happened is, a plague breaks out, and he davens at that point. In the same way that he davened, by the way, for the child that he and Bathsheba had that died, he says, "What did the child do? Punish me, don't punish." Vayomer David el Hashem, "Chatati me'od asher asiti." I sinned greatly when I, whatever I did. "V'ata Hashem ha'avirna et avadecha, ki niskalti me'od." Please God, pass over this sin. In other words, erase it, because I was extremely foolish. So he doesn't divert blame to somebody else. He's always willing to assume responsibility, and he believes that the welfare of the people has been put on his shoulders. That's his job, and he's willing to, if you like, be the sacrificial lamb for them. As a result, he serves to a large degree as the model. But beyond the model, it was merely a matter of prophecy. I won't even go into how Yeshayahu describes how the Melech HaMashiach was. I chose instead for you the prophecy of Zechariah, because he's much later. And Zechariah foretells the function of what Moshiach ben David will be, in which he sees this in his mind's eye. And he tells, "Gili me'od bat Zion, harib bat Yerushalayim." You can celebrate, rejoice. Hine malkech yavolach, for your king will come to you. Tzadik v'noshahu. He is righteous, and the word nosha in nif'al doesn't say that he is the Moshiach. He is nosha, he was saved. But the Mefarshim explain that in the same way that he was saved, he sees as his job as to save the abused from the abuser, the weak from the strong. He then goes on and says as follows, Ani v'kochev al chamo. He will be poor, impoverished, riding on a mere donkey as opposed to horses. You'll remember that in Devarim it says that the king should not increase too many horses, horses being weapons of war. You understand? He's just like a lowly farmer. Val ayir ben atanot. And in case you think that it's a donkey, you can have one donkey, a little one. It's a tiny little donkey, a little one. That's all he rides. V'hichrati rechev me'efraim. And why will that be the case? For I will cut off any chariots from Ephraim. There won't be any more weapons of war. V'sus mi'Yerushalayim. There won't be any horses. These are simply symbols of tanks and bombers and artillery. You understand? That's what it's about. V'nichrata keshet melchama. And we'll break the bow of, right, bows and arrows of war. And his job instead will be v'diber shalom lagoyim. His message, this king, is to speak peace to all the nations, not just the Eden, to the world. Umishalom miyam adyam, he will reign from sea to sea. And it can't be, what sea are we talking about? We're talking literally across the world. Uminaha ad afsei aretz, and from the river to the edges of the earth. And his job is to ultimately reign and bring peace and justice to the world. So that is what David was supposed to be. Comes now this, if you like, prayer. Lamnatzeach mizmor le David. Hashem be'ozcha yismach melech. The king will rejoice, he'll be happy with your strength, God, not with his strength. Ubiyeshuatcha ma yagel me'od. And in your salvation, oh, how he will regale. Now, please notice that there are different words in Hebrew for happiness. Sason, simcha, gila. Gila is the joy that one has upon legalot, revelation. So when he sees your salvation, oh, ah, I see. In other words, he will see that this is not him, that this is the hand of God. The hand of God. It will be as clear as day. We didn't do this. This was clearly miraculous.
So where did the other kings lose their way?
The human flaw is that we are given the choice
of good or bad.
From day one, from Gan Eden. So we can go this way, we can go this way. And when they are crowning this king, can you imagine the way I see this mizmor? Is I see a mizmor that was composed upon a coronation, asking, if you like, God's blessing upon the king, that the king would see that he is legitimate in on his throne to the degree that he sees himself as a servant of God. And that he takes the glory that would come for him personally and diverts it directly to the source of it, to Hashem. Ta'avat libo natatalo. Past tense. That which his heart longed for, lusted, desired, you gave him. Ve'areset sfatav balmanata. And the words that came out of his mouth, by the way, this is the only place in the entire Tanakh where we have the word areset. we use it, Hareshet Sfateinu Yerav Lefanecha, in the tefillah of Rosh Hashanah.
Yeah.
We say that Hareshet Sfateinu Yerav Lefanecha Kel Ram V'Nisa during the Tkiyot. Some say it's the word Areset, that is Rabbi Shimshon Yisrael Hirsch, who wants to claim that the Shin and the Sin are interchangeable, and Sin and Samach are interchangeable. Le'ares is betrothal. So how can you say the betrothal of your lips? What's the betrothal of your lips? The assumption, therefore, that this is some kind of expression of one's inner feelings. You have not withheld. Sela. Is Sela forever? Is Sela the end of a stanza, or is this just a musical flourish? What he wanted, you gave him, and you didn't withhold what he asked for. In a sense, the power given to David was one that we recognize for tzaddikim. It's called tzaddik gozer ve'akadosh baruch hu mekayem. A tzaddik has the power to decree, and God fulfills it. And why did God give him what is ta'avat libo? The lust of his heart. God legitimized what? Sin? Yetzer hara? No, because the true desire of David, certainly in his youth, was to do what? Do what's right. Do what's just. That was his desire. It was truly a desire. And because he was truly willing to go and lay himself on the line for all of that, you gave it to him. Says Radak, that this was said by one of the musicians, one of the Levim, who spoke about David, Beruach HaKodesh. Rashi says, the Medrash tells us, that this is not written about David at all. This is written about the Melech HaMoshiach. V'nachon lefotro od al David atzmo. It's okay to even apply it to David. I'm arguing simply that David had his heights, served as the model for the ideal king. This is clearly Le David, according to most of the opinions of the Rishonim and the Medrash, meaning that it's not composed by David, it's dedicated to David. Le David can mean for David. Ki tegadmenu birkotov. Not only did you fulfill his desires and grant him what he asked for, tekadmenu, you went and preempted him with blessings of good. Before he could even ask for it, you greeted him with all of the good that he could have, possibly. And what is this good? Tashit l'rosho ateret paz. You put on his head a crown of gold. Others say that the word paz is studded with jewels. Chaim sha'al mimcha. He asked merely for
life.
When he was being persecuted, when Shaul was out to get him, when it looked like hair's breadth away from death, he asked for nothing more than to live. And how long did David live?
70.
Yeah. So we are now a week before Shavuos. And Shavuos is David's yahrzeit.
Yeah.
So he asked for life. Natata lo orech yamin. So you gave him the length of days, olam va'ed. Well, he didn't live very long, because 70 is seen as the, if you like, the minimum for what we would think of as a normal lifespan. So you would tell us that he gave us orech yamim, and consequently, Rashi says he asked lehitalech be'arzot hachaim. He asked to have the chance to live here amongst the living, and you gave him an everlasting throne. You gave him the fact that his dynasty will last forever until the Moshiach. Radak says, no. He asked for life ba'olam hazeh, and you gave him orech yomim le'olam voed ba'olam haba. Gadol kvodo b'yeshuatecha. His honor was increased because of your salvation. Hod v'hadar tishave alav. He was equal to, he was worthy of the hod and the hadar that was given to him. Hod being internal beauty, says Malbim. Hadar being external beauty that was given to him. He received both. Kitishitehu brachot la'ad, you placed upon him everlasting blessings. Techadehu, from the word chedva, and you made him happy. Besimcha et panecha, with the happiness that comes with seeing your face. You can almost see a Kohen saying this. Yivarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'yichunecha. Nisa Hashem panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. What does it mean? Says Rashi, what's broche? What is broche? When somebody says yivarechecha. Well, it means increase. Increase what? Increase children, increase money, increase health. Then comes yishmerecha. Why do I need yishmerecha for? Because unfortunately, once you've got it, you also have to be able to keep it, or somebody will take it away from you. So now we have to preserve it. But now comes the issue of ma'or panim, when somebody says that God shone his countenance on him. You saw him? It's the sense that the Ribbono Shel Olam is with you. He's the wind under your wings. It's the sense that you feel that you've got Sata Dishmaya in what you're doing. You have to put the effort in. But you know full well that the next guy is putting just as much effort in, yet somehow you've got a certain push, and it worked for you. Extra chedva, this extra happiness. And please notice that the word chedva is related to the word yachad. It is another word for happiness, but it comes from the sense that he's with me. The joy that he has is that God's face is with him, ki'ilu. It's like he's smiling down at me. It's going just the way I hoped it would go. Things are moving my way. Says Radak, et panecha is all panecha. And it is the hatzlacha in whatever person's doing. A lot of people work very hard, but they're not matzliach. It has nothing to do with how much effort they put in. That hatzloche is me'ol panim. But Rashi says, et panecha, ultimate happiness that you will give him, is when he comes to see your face be'olam haba. And all this prayer is being given, comes the next verse. Ki hamelech boteach b'Hashem. For the king trusts in God, ubechesed elyon, and in the love that comes from on high, that unconditional chesed, bal yimot, that shall never falter. What will not falter? The king or the chesed? And that's where our mefoshim are divided. Does bal yimot mean the melech? The melech boteach b'Hashem bal yimot, that because he trusts in God, he will never falter? Or does it say he trusts in God in chesed that comes from above that will never falter? Not that he won't ever falter or he won't ever fall, but God's love will never fall. Now comes the second half. And the second half now, completely different. I'm now talking to the king. Timsa yadcha lechol oyvecha. May you find your hand against all your enemies. In other words, find the strength, find the power to go against all your enemies. Yemincha, your right hand. Timsa sonecha. May it find those that hate you. As opposed to what? God forbid, not the innocent. God forbid, no collateral damage. Tishitemo ketanu esh. May you put them like a burning fire, a furnace of fire, le'et panecha. At the time of, and now there's a play about the word panecha. Asimet panai, Ishau, says God, I will put my face against that person. It means at the time of your rage. Mm-hmm. And at that time, in case you want to make sure that it's not you, Hashem be'apo yivalim. Hashem in his anger will swallow them. V'tochlem esh, and fire will consume them. In other words, all of your strength and all of your might will do you nothing. In the final analysis, who will vanquish the enemy? The Ribbono Shel Olam himself. Who is this enemy, according to Rashi? It's Amalek. Because that was the job of the king. Once we have a king, his job is to go to war against Amalek. Pil yamo me'eretz te'abed. His fruit you must wipe out from this earth. His fruit meaning anything that he's built, including his children. Vezaram mibnei adam, and erase their children, their seed, from the human race. Kinatu alecha rabba. For they have aimed, stretched against you all evil. Chashvu mizima balyuchalu. They plotted, they schemed all kinds of plans, which they could not fulfill. Kitishitemu shechem. Typically, the word shechem is your shoulder. So some say, move them over to the side. Move them over to the side in order to do what? Bemetarecha, on your strings, as you pull the strings of your bow. Techonen al pnehem, aim on their faces. Your job is to separate them from all other human beings. Remember what we said? We're not interested in killing the innocent. We don't want collateral damage, not only amongst the Jews. We want to separate amongst the goyim, those that actually hate us, those that are Amalek, and those that are not. So we need to take Amalek and set him aside, and only then aim and shoot them. That's the job of the Melech HaMoshiach. And it would also have been the job of David. We don't want to have innocent lives lost in the process. So the question then is, does the word Shechem mean move to the side? Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, no. He says Shechem is the shoulder. Because, and he's imagining not a bow and arrow, unless you pull it all the way to the shoulder, I guess, but rather a crossbow. So you place it on your shoulder, the bow rests on on the shoulder as he aims to shoot. The odd thing is that he calls it metarecha in plural. Metarim are strings. And the only metarim that we know that David had was on his harp. Is it a possibility that this is not talking about a battle necessarily of bows and arrows, but possibly, and I have not found yet an asmachta for it, but rather that you will be able to vanquish those enemies with none other than David HaMelech's music. Be that as it may, I just wanted to throw that at you because of the word metarim, metarecha in plural, as opposed to metar. You will see that certain words are repeated. Tishitemu ketanur esh, ketishitemu shechem. Is he addressing the king? Is he addressing Melech HaMoshiach? Or may I be so bold as to say he's also addressing Kutcha Brichu? In case you missed it, comes the last line. Ruma Hashem ve'oscha, rise up God in your strength. Nashira v'nezama v'ratecha, so that we can sing and play music to your victory. That's why I thought Meitarecha might be nothing more than the strings of the harp. You will notice that it began Hashem be'oscha, and it ends Ruma Hashem be'oscha. I just wanted you to see the parallels that go both ways, and how beautifully structured this particular mishmor is. I believe this mizmor would have been a very appropriate, if you like, dedication to a king's coronation, advising him about his duties, advising him about the fact that he's nothing unless the Rabbanu Shel Olam is with him.